Okay. All right. So Diane's going to tell us a little bit about the CAPTCHA project, but also think about the loop of knowledge to action, action back to knowledge.
Thanks, Terry. Hopefully I'll do justice to the questions you were asking me yesterday. So I think actually, in a way, CAPTCHA is one of the only rival for an acronym now is Megaphone against CAPTCHA. CAPTCHA stands for the Canadian Platform to Increase Usage of Real-World Evidence. So I'm going to actually start with the conversation we were having yesterday about levels and scale, and this is my version, if you will, of the different scales. You know, you're starting down at the level of genes and proteins to organ systems, and I'll make mention that I would put the brain in as an organ system in a sense, and a lot of the things in the way that the matrix is set up that we're going to talk about this afternoon talks about psychosocial stuff like that. But this works for me. So you go from genes and proteins to organ systems to the individual, work, school, and home. Those are sort of proximal environments, community, et cetera. And what we were talking about yesterday and the question that I was raising is about this notion that if we tend to be focused on the individual, we can kind of go down from the individual to those levels of organ systems or genes and proteins or other biological measures, or we can go up and ask them or try to understand the environments in which they live. Now, in terms of complex systems thinking, for me, I would say that when we're thinking about the individual, we're thinking the things that are below the individual at that biological level are things that play a role in determining their capacity to deal with their environments. And the things above the individual tend to determine the complexity of the environments in which they live. And the reason why I think this distinction is important is when we think about a very complex system, if we think about that spaghetti map and the individuals in that, it's really important to recognize that you need to make sure that the capacity of the individual to act matches the complexity of the task that they have to function in the environment in which they're making that function. And if, in fact, the complexity of the environment is greater than the capacity of the individual in that complex system to act, then they're going to fail. And we have two ways to think about how to prevent failure in a complex system when we've got a lot of individuals. We can either try to make the complexity of their environment less, or we can increase their capacity to deal with their environments. And these are strategies that are going to be very familiar to us when we think about it, particularly trying to deal with the complexity of the environment. Well, individuals immediately simplify the complexity of their environment by not being conscious, in some respects, of a lot of the things that are in their environment. So this is, I think, an important relationship, and I'll bring it to the notion of the loop in a second. The question I was asking yesterday, for those who didn't get where I was going, was what if we think about this sequence in a different way and we move up the chain, in a sense, and think about the environment as the the sort of common denominator, then, again, the capacity of our capacity to change environments like work, school, and home now depend on not only the biology but also the individual that biology is contained in, right? And the complexity, again, of changing, for example, the school environment depends on the community or the district or the region that you're in. So the notion of capacity and complexity are still important, but I'm suggesting we kind of move up the food chain as we think about it, because it'll change the way we think about some of the modeling exercises that we're going to undertake. And I think the Megaphone example is a useful example of how you might begin to sort of move up this food chain to a level of analysis that's not looking necessarily starting with the individual, but starting with the environments. And so I think that was a good example of that. Now, I'm going to shift gears slightly, but I'll come back to that notion and how it fits within the context of the knowledge to action cycle. So for those of you who do interventions and are thinking about that, we're really strongly very much in an environment now where we think about knowledge going to action, and we should be thinking about action going back to knowledge. And in the lingo of public health, knowledge to action is about disseminating and implementing evidence-based practice, and certainly in Canada and North America, this is the state of the art. You know, we need to be doing this a lot, right? And there's a demand that our actions be based on evidence. And in academia, usually that evidence is typically at a high level, like randomized control trials, and then we think about pushing it out to communities to do their work. And there's lots of problems there, and I'll talk about that in a second. But on the other side of the coin is that we need to learn from the actions we're taking. And Harry gave a great talk yesterday that kind of set up this challenge and the fact that there's a lot of barriers at the moment to collecting practice-based evidence. And in fact, my next slide is to articulate what some of those real-world challenges are. If we really want this cycle to function, if we want to put knowledge into action and base our actions on knowledge, but also base our knowledge on our actions in the real world, there's some significant challenges, like there are many forms of knowledge, and in the academic environment, things like tacit knowledge and experiential knowledge and qualitative information that goes in the form of knowledge for a practitioner are not generally respected. So there's a real creates a significant problem when you go from kind of academic knowledge from an RCT kind of paradigm into the real world. There's a lot of challenges and gaps there because it misses a lot of forms of knowledge. The capacity of practitioners who are doing interventions or policymakers who are doing policy change to actually use knowledge is actually fairly limited in many respects because, you know, sometimes they're doing it off the side of their desk, they don't know where to access the knowledge, or the knowledge is not in a form that they know how to use. And the complexity of the environments and the populations that they're dealing with may require adaptation of that sort of rigorous knowledge that we think about. So there's lots of challenges in going from knowledge to action. Likewise, there's a lot of challenges in going from action back to knowledge, like a lack of resources, and here I'm talking about time, skills, and money for evaluation. Harry pointed this out yesterday. We, you know, in Canada, we spend a lot of money on interventions. Government puts a lot of money on all kinds of interventions at the national and provincial level, and they usually run out of money when it's time for the evaluation process. So there's big gaps in terms of evaluation of real-world activity. And lastly, there's no real systematic way to capture the successes and the failures, as Harry pointed out to us yesterday. We really need to capture those things. So lots of challenges in doing this, moving through this cycle in a fulsome way, going all the way around the cycle in the real world. So I think there's some real-world opportunities then. If there's these kinds of challenges, there's also opportunities, like, you know, providing evaluation support, both technical, actual IT support as well as social support could be important, developing common indicators and tools so that when interventions are done of similar ilk, that they're using common indicators and tools so that ultimately we can roll up that information to understand what works for whom and under what conditions. We can create database of comparable interventions so that both successes and failures can actually be captured. We can work on mechanisms for reflective practice. How do we take what we learn from our own interventions and apply it in a cyclic way back into those interventions as we move forward? So in an iterative fashion, how do we close that loop? We need to identify relevant and useful knowledge. I think, you know, there was, in talking to Harry last night, we're talking about the issue of, you know, what are the core elements of an intervention that can't be changed or adapted, and what other kinds of elements and information can be useful to adaptation. And again, adaptation to the contextual area. So these are a lot of the possibilities that we could endeavor to build support for in order to solve some of the barriers that were on that last slide. And that, in fact, is in essence the mission of the CAPTCHR project. Our mission statement is that we'll collect, share, and support the use of real-world evidence on what works for whom and under what context and in what context to improve. And here the focus is on primary prevention of chronic disease, because we have the vision that we'll have effective primary prevention of chronic disease in Canada because we learn from what we do, because we close that loop and create, as my IT guy says, an end-to-end solution, that we try to create supports that go all the way around the cycle. In the context of the discussion that and the way I set up the discussion, CAPTCHR hopefully will enhance the capacity of practitioners and policymakers to act and to reduce the complexity of learning from what they do. So that's kind of in those notions of the levels where I'm thinking about. So now, in a little bit about language, we've been struggling internally to make sure we're always talking about the same thing, but what I'm talking about here for Capture is that we'll create both a platform, an IT solution, which would be at the heart of this system, as well as a high-touch, if you will, or surrounding efforts that would support the IT platform and enable people to use the full system. We've done, I don't have time to tell you about all the homework that we've done over the last 6 months around understanding what else is out there, and we've clearly missed some things because when we had our consultation workshop a few weeks ago, we learned about a number of other things. But I'll just show you one illustration because it's kind of a modeling exercise in its own way of a concept map that was developed through a standardized process to understand what the different elements of this system needed to be. And you can see there's lots of stuff inside those boxes, if you will. But there's a lot. We learned a lot of lessons from Wide Consulting about how we needed to create the structure. It led to some of the values that we think are important and that Capture is based on, which is that it's user-driven, i.e. from the practitioner's point of view. It's about continuous learning. We're going to try to do it through, if you will, a servant leadership approach, which means we need some leadership, but we're there to serve the practitioner and the user of the system. We view this as an interdependence exercise because there's lots of stuff out there, and although we don't want to create a website with just a bunch of links, what we want to create is a seamless solution, but we want to capitalize on other activity. And this will be open source and open architecture, and we see it as a shared resource. And I'll skip that as much as I'd like to talk about it. We've classified our stakeholders as users, builders, and supporters. And as I say, we're driven by the needs of practitioners and practice managers and policy and decision makers. But we'll, of course, see this as a very useful database for researchers in the long run. We'll build it and work with users and practitioners to do that. And at present, it's currently funded by the Canadian Partnership Against Cancer, which is where the focus on primary prevention of chronic disease comes from. But we see it, in relevant to the conversation here, as a repository for a variety of different kinds of data than some of the data we've been talking about, things like program plans and logic models, common indicators, and the data that is collected by practitioners from their interventions within those common indicators. It could potentially contain budget information, although I think that'll technically be challenging to get people to provide that, various kinds of reports and summative lessons learned. So just coming back to this quickly, I think that Capture kind of sits within this paradigm at the level of interventions that are occurring in those proximal environments to individuals, and hopefully it will deal with these issues of collecting data primarily probably from individuals, maybe not at the biological level, but why not? There's no reason why we can't go down that way. And it will try to situate these within the context of communities and regional, national, and global environments so that when practitioners come to the database to look to see what has worked and what hasn't worked, they can look at it through a lens that helps them find the things that they feel are relevant to their practice. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Diane. No, that's. I think the purpose of this talk was to give us to initiate the thinking as you fill out the matrix later on, to not only think about sort of causally oriented framework, but solution oriented framework as well. So.